It's now my privilege to introduce our second speaker today, Dr. Jason Jewell, who chairs the Department of Humanities at Faulkner University, where he's taught since 2004. At Faulkner, he directs the Center for Great Books and Human Flourishing and degree programs based on the great books of Western civilization. Since January of this year, he has been a resident fellow of the American Studies Institute at Harding University. He is a contributor to Christian Faith and Social Justice, Five Views, and The Inklings and King Arthur. And he has contributed to 10 academic journals and 5 encyclopedias. His writings have appeared in The American Conservative, Chronicles, American Reformer, The University Bookman, Law and Liberty, and other conservative and libertarian publications. He was elected to membership in the Philadelphia Society in 2017 and became a trustee of the Society this year. A homeschooling father of 7, he currently labors under an onerous monthly grocery bill courtesy of the Federal Reserve.
Good afternoon. In the year 2000, Harvard sociologist Robert Putnam sounded the alarm on the decline of civil society in his book Bowling Alone, with which I'm sure many of you are familiar. The trends that Putnam identified have continued over the past generation. Tim Carney gave an updated picture with a more conservative spin in Alienated America more recently. So what are these trends? We've got declines in civic participation across the board. I know many of you are familiar with this information, so I won't belabor it, but you can review the sad condition of your own state and county by consulting the Congressional Republican Social Capital Project's website, which is published by the Joint Economic Committee. So Putnam identified a number of causes for this decline in civic participation, including the advent of the two-income household, because in previous generations, what today we call stay-at-home moms drove a lot of activity in civil society with their volunteer and charity work. We have urban sprawl and longer commutes than we did a couple of generations ago, so that eats up a lot of time that people would might otherwise have to participate in civic engagement and voluntary associations. We've got electronic entertainment, which Putnam actually identified in the year 2000 when he was just talking about television as the number one cause of this decline. Today we can add video games to that and other kind of electronic opiates. And then there's also the nationalization and globalization of economic structures in our society. So, you know, 50 years ago, the president of your local bank was a pillar of the community with a real stake in its flourishing. Today he's more likely to be a branch manager in a multinational corporation who can't wait to move up and out, shaking your town's dust off his feet when he gets his next promotion. And this decline in civic engagement has a lot of negative consequences, as Putnam identified. Social capital allows for the solving of collective problems more easily. It lowers the transaction costs of daily life. It helps to helps people to develop and maintain character traits that are good for society. It leads to better educational outcomes for kids. And there are many other economic and psychological benefits, and again, I won't belabor those. I know that many of you are very familiar with those. But since this meeting is dedicated to countering the left's long march through the institutions, I'd like to propose a way for us to work toward that goal within the institutions of civil society. In 1972, Albert O. Hirschman proposed the exit voice loyalty framework for responding to institutional decline. So an individual or group can respond to decline by exiting the institution. You could actively attempt to reform the institution, that's what he called voice. Or you could quietly remain loyal, committed to the institution, and hoping that things will turn around. Later social scientists like Carol Rustbelt added neglect as an option. And here the response is to withdraw active support from the institution and do the bare minimum to maintain one's affiliation with it in the hopes that decline will accelerate to the point that leadership will be forced to address the problems. Now, Aaron Wren has proposed a slight alteration to this framework that sets up a 2x2 matrix with four quadrants of response to institutional decline. Now, they don't let us do PowerPoint slides here at the Philadelphia Society. I wish I had done what Phil Magnus did earlier today and put handouts on the tables, but I didn't think to do that. So I'm going to ask you to imagine a 2x2 quadrant with two axes. On the horizontal axis, you've got over here a defensive posture towards the institution, and on the right, you have an offensive posture towards a particular institution. So that's your horizontal axis. And then on your vertical axis, you've got at the top investing or increasing investment in the institution, and down at the bottom, disinvestment in the institution. So that gives us a 2x2 grid. I'd like to speak briefly about how conservatives might relate to each of those four quadrants. So let's say in the bottom right, this is where you are disinvesting in the institution while simultaneously attacking it. We could call this, or Wren calls this, the destroy or delegitimize quadrant. And this is where the left hangs out quite a bit, as you know. For example, radical feminists want to delegitimize marriage and the natural family. Antifa wants to tear down many of society's institutions. Left libertarians often work to weaken traditional institutions in the name of liberating their members. But there's also some activity in this quadrant from the right. As Delano just mentioned a moment ago, there's a movement on the right now that's called Men Going Their Own Way. If you Google MGTOW, you'll pop up a lot of hits on this movement. These are guys who are actively working to delegitimize marriage as not being in men's best interest, given the current social and political environment. Now, in my opinion, this is not an appropriate quadrant for conservatives to devote their energy, for the most part. Yuval Levin has told us that it's a time to build. It's the title of his 2020 book, which I'm sure some of you have read, and I happen to agree with him. Conservatives are supposed to be builders, not destroyers. Certainly, there are some institutions out there that probably should be delegitimized. But when it comes to civil society, where the overall trend has been one of decline for many years, we should be focused on building better alternatives rather than destroying whatever is still left. So let's go to the bottom left quadrant. Over in this part, you've got disinvestment in an institution, but also defense, defensive posture. So in other words, this might include leaving an existing institution to create and build a parallel one. And Wren calls this the withdraw and restart strategy. Conservatives are really good at this. We're really good at withdrawing and restarting. Our movement originated in large part in opposition to a dominant liberal establishment. And from the very beginning, we've made the choice at certain times to abandon an institution that was judged to be hopeless and build a better alternative. So let me give you a couple of examples. The Presbyterian Church in America breaking off from the Presbyterian Church USA in the 1970s. The Anglican Church in North America separating from the Episcopal Church in the 2000s. And the Christian day school and homeschool movements beginning in the 1960s when the judicial campaign to drive religion from public schools began. Similarly, conservatives have started some new institutions of higher education, such as New St. Andrews College and Wyoming Catholic College in recent decades. And in the world of membership organizations, perhaps the most prominent example in recent years is Trail Life, an outdoor youth program that was formed when the Boy Scouts began to make concessions to LGBT activism and government pressure. Now, this was a bitter pill for me to swallow because I was an Eagle Scout. I wanted to remain loyal to the Boy Scouts, and I had my kids in Cub Scouts and Boy Scouts for several years. But then when the pandemic hit and our local troop stopped meeting and the Trail Life troop down the street was meeting, I said, okay, well, it's time to move over. And so that's where my kids have been in Trail Life since that time. So as I said, the right has had a great deal of success in developing parallel institutions like these. But of course, a weakness of this strategy is that when we walk away from a legacy institution to start something new, we leave behind major assets in the hands of our opponents. Real estate, revenue sources, brand recognition, and the loyalty of what's often the majority of people who are either unable or unwilling to give up on the legacy institution. And no doubt many of our withdraw and restart projects were necessary But we should consider the possibility that we have historically been too ready to disinvest in institutions that might have been reformed or recaptured. Moreover, the low-hanging fruit is gone from this quadrant, and there are good reasons to believe that this strategy will have a lower yield for us going forward. So let's think about the top left quadrant. Over here, you've got a defensive posture towards the institution, but you're increasing investment in it. So we could call this the reform quadrant. The right has not had as much experience in this quadrant, but we appear to be gaining it. Several of the institutions over which we have historically maintained a significant presence, if not influence, have recently come under pressure from progressives. Even some of our successful institutions founded on the withdraw and restart strategy are now vulnerable to infiltration. I'm thinking of the recent high-profile struggles over theological orthodoxy in the Southern Baptist Convention and the Presbyterian Church in America. The classic learning test, which was developed just a few years ago as an alternative to the ACT and SAT, and has achieved some major successes, such as being accepted by the Florida State higher ed system, is already embroiled in controversy on the right for allegedly making concessions to leftist notions of representation. And many of you are familiar with the recent controversies at Grove City College, where at least one department apparently attempted an end run around institutional processes to offer woke-inflected courses to students. Now, I'm not an expert on the particulars of each of these situations, and I acknowledge the possibility that some of them might not be cause for grave concern. But the point is, when conservatives have the benefit of engaging with friendly or even neutral institutions, we need to protect them. We need to work to ensure that to whatever extent we can, we identify or install sympathetic people in positions of authority and influence in those institutions and support them once they are there. I've already heard the phrase once this weekend, personnel is policy. In the last decade, we've repeatedly seen the truth of this maxim, and we can no longer rely solely on procedural safeguards. So let's go to the top right. We've got an offensive posture and increasing investment in the institution in this quadrant, and Wren calls this the capture or replace strategy. This is definitely the quadrant where conservatives have the most to learn. Since the movement began, serious attempts to recapture institutions that have come under leftist control have been few and far between, and successful attempts have been still more scarce. We might point to the conservative resurgence in the Southern Baptist Convention in the 1970s as one of the very rare examples. The success of the Federalist Society might be another one, although I can't really say we've recaptured the legal profession, but we've built a bulwark there at least, and that's all to the good. But thanks to the work of Chris Rufo and others, it's becoming increasingly clear that the right has opportunities in this quadrant that we ought to consider. A promising development in Florida was the election of dozens of Ron DeSantis-endorsed school board candidates last year, as parents reacted in frustration to news of how Florida's public schools have been indoctrinating their kids. And one of those successful school board candidates is a doctoral student in my humanities program who lives in Sarasota. So I've been hearing all kinds of interesting stories from him this year as he has begun to navigate these waters of the local school board issues. And that the left has had such a hysterical reaction to the developments at New College, Florida, is very telling and I think a sign of vulnerability. The reforms at New College, Florida were possible because of that institution's obvious exhaustion and decay. It had become clear beyond any reasonable doubt that left-wing governance had run it into the ground. And under those desperate circumstances, recapture became possible. Now, our states, cities, and towns are full of exhausted institutions and associations that need new blood and new leadership. And not all of them are exhausted because of left-wing incompetence or ideological drift. Many of them still perform socially useful functions, but are simply withering in the face of the structural challenges that Robert Putnam and others have identified. When my family moved into a neighborhood closer to Faulkner's campus just before the pandemic, I got in touch with the president of the neighborhood association and asked about its activities. And his response was, "Be careful. If you start asking questions like that, you may end up running things." Now, not all of these organizations merit investment, given our very limited resources. But it's worth asking which associations in your town or your state might be ripe for takeover, particularly if they are currently exercising some malign influence. Many of these groups have access to local media, and they can exert pressure for good or ill on local governments. Or they might have other avenues of exerting cultural influence. So please don't misunderstand what I'm saying. I'm not recommending a politicization of every voluntary association and social institution. To the contrary, I agree with Robert Putnam that these organizations are vital arenas for building relationships based on common interests with people who are different from us politically. I'm talking about preserving associational life as a forum for everyone. But to the extent that the left attempts to weaponize social institutions, we have to fight back. When we survey our institutional landscape, we have to be smart about which strategy to adopt with each significant institution. So just as an example, think about your local public library. I can say with some confidence that the left controls it. The left gained control of your library by, number one, infiltrating and taking over the American Library Association. Number two, instituting left-wing accreditation standards for university programs in library science through the ALA. And then number three, persuading local governments that only graduates of ALA-accredited programs are qualified to run public libraries. So what can we do about that? Now, we could attempt to recapture the ALA and change its accreditation standards, but that's a very long-term project and will not address the urgent problem of pornography on the shelves in the children's section in your library today. So we need some creative thinking. In Front Royal, Virginia, citizens put pressure on the local government to simply defund the library. There was an article on that in the American Conservative earlier this summer. So this would fall into the delegitimize and destroy quadrant. And in my view, that ought to be a last resort. Another possible strategy is to persuade the local government that you don't need a master's degree from an ALA-accredited program to be a competent librarian. The city could hire trusted people and provide a crash course of on-the-job training, or look for an alternative credentialing method. And this approach would potentially combine a capture-replace strategy with respect to the library, along with a withdraw and restart attempt on the level of the accrediting body. So again, Florida is providing a possible model here by challenging the existing regional accreditation regime for schools and colleges. But we need more intellectual labor within our movement devoted to developing playbooks for people at the state and local levels who wish to start, reform, or recapture social institutions. We're starting to see the Heritage Foundation and a few other groups devote more attention to what's happening at the state and local levels, and I hope that trend will continue. I would love to see some sort of guidance for people who are looking at a local institution and attempting to figure out which strategy to employ with respect to it. When it comes to most of our voluntary associations in particular, we don't need to train a whole generation of activists. We just need a recovery of smart civic engagement, and I think our movement can lead the way on that. Thank you.